love making people laugh.
Yeah.
It's the greatest feeling in the world to laugh and to make other people laugh.
Hi, welcome to Resonate, conversations and life lessons from Rancho La Puerta. I'm your host, Barry. Before I started working at the ranch, I didn't realize how amazing vegan and vegetarian food could taste. My guest today is Chef AJ, and she is a vegan chef, and she frequently is a chef here at Rancho La Puerta. She has written 3 vegan cookbooks. Her latest book is called Sweet Indulgence, and it's all desserts. Besides being vegan, she never uses oil or sugar in her recipes. She was sweet enough to give me a copy for my daughter, who is a vegan, who actually cooks, which I don't. Chef AJ started her career as a comedian and still has a wonderful sense of humor. She was lucky enough to get a spot on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, which is every comedian's dream. She has lost 70 pounds and keeps it off with a healthy lifestyle. Recently, AJ was diagnosed with stage 3 lung cancer, but she's using humor and a positive attitude to deal with it. She's keeping a journal on lessons that cancer is teaching her, and we're gonna talk about some of those today.
Good morning, AJ.
Hi, Barry. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining me, and I'm really excited. This is my first time that I'm actually doing a podcast actually in person with someone. Usually the person's in Tokyo or, you know, Chicago, and you're actually here at the ranch this week. So
that's how Rich Roll does it. Always in person.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. So you are here with the group, and you are a chef.
Yes, I am.
And you are a vegan chef.
Vegan chef, yeah.
Now, you have been a vegan for how many years?
47 and a half years.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
I know, it's crazy. Longer than you've been alive.
Yeah, no, not quite. Thank you. But I want to talk about you. You haven't always been a chef.
Right.
You were a comedian.
Right. And I still kind of am, you know, aspiring. That's what I really, really wanted to be. And, you know, at a certain point, I have to make a living in this world. And that's when I went to culinary school.
Right. But, I mean, you were a comedian who was on The Tonight Show. That is every comedian's
dream. Right.
Like, when you get on The Tonight Show, you've made it.
You think so. You made it, but then where was the work after that, you know? But I did. I was on, you know, believe it or not, I was on The Tonight Show when I was 14 years old.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, I wasn't a guest. So back in the day, Joey Bishop was the guest host every Monday night for Johnny Carson. And I was obsessed with Johnny Carson. I just thought he was I just loved his show, his timing, the way he treated his guests, you know, because now, like, people can be mean to guests, and that's, like, a thing in show business. But he was such a consummate gentleman. He was just the way he would react, I loved him. And for whatever reason, my parents let me stay up late, and we would watch The Tonight Show. I was born in 1960 in Chicago. We would flip between him and Joey Bishop. They were on against each other. And so my mom worked for a doctor in Burbank near NBC, and there was a patient there that could get us tickets. And so I would go all the time to watch The Tonight Show in person, because I used to play the trumpet, and I loved Doc Severinsen. I had a big crush on him. And so we would get, like, front row seats. Well, Joey Bishop used to do this thing called Talent Land, kind of like today's Gong Show, where unscripted, unrehearsed, you didn't know in advance, he would go out into the audience and say, does anybody have any talent? Mm-hmm. And it was October 10th, 1974, the day that Spiro Agnew resigned, because that was the big news of the day. And this is when The Tonight Show was filmed the day before and aired later. Then it was filmed same day. And I raised my hand and I got on the show first that time from the audience. I played my cheeks. It's this thing where you, like, I haven't done it in a while.
That's awesome.
Right. So I played the William. I'm a little rusty. I haven't done this in a while. So I played the William Tell Overture on my cheeks. And then they give you a prize. It was a meal for two at Eve's Gourmet Restaurant in Brentwood. And it's amazing how many people watch that show, because, like, people, like I'm 14, and people, like, are recognizing you on the street, right? So I wasn't actually booked, but that was, like, my first taste of show business. And I was like, oh, my God, I just loved it, you know? Not so much because I wanted to be famous or rich. I love making people laugh.
Yeah.
It's the greatest feeling in the world to laugh and to make other people laugh. And that's apparently what it did. I was on the Gong Show Next when I was 16 years old doing something very similar. And I didn't win because of, I think it was, who was it? Artie Johnson gave me a 6, even though J.P. Morgan gave me a 10. I think Alan Ludden gave me a 7. And I remember because I was 16 and you had to like go to school on the set. I love being in that environment. Yeah. But it's, you know how competitive it is. You know, everybody wants the very few jobs that there are. Well, anyway, so in my 20s, I did get an agent, Sid Levine. Thank you, Sid. And he got me an audition to The Tonight Show, which like is huge. Because I didn't have any credits, little one lines here and there, you know.
Were you doing stand-up?
I wasn't really doing stand-up. I was just trying to be like a comedic actress. You know, I was going on an audition tonight. You know, I had like a line on Night Court and like nothing major, like just very small. Did one commercial, one national commercial that aired in the Super Bowl, but very, very little work, you know. And I went to this audition for The Tonight Show. I remember the guy, the booker, was Bob Dolce. And he was like kind of in a bad mood. He goes, oh, these actors, they're just not real people. So I impressed him in my interview with what is known as a specialty act. I wasn't really doing stand-up, but I had this unusual act that now everybody does weird stuff with YouTube and shows like America's Got Talent. But in 1987, there weren't a lot of people doing unusual things. And my unusual skill or act was I play two flutes through my nose, which you could do and I could teach you. But then I did it standing on my head, which not everybody can do because not everybody can stand on their head and do that. And also blowing bubbles with bubble gum out of my nose. And you could link to that. They can watch this little clip, right? Mm-hmm. And it was unusual. And
how did you aspire to that?
That's kind of what Johnny Carson said. And I didn't, it's not like when I was little, I thought, what weird thing could I do? I'm kind of ADD and I was always bored in school and I was just looking for unusual things to do. And this instrument, which is called a tonette, it's not an actual flute, it's called a recorder. It was part of my curriculum in private school when I was growing up. And I was a gum chewer. And so I didn't want to have to take the gum out. And so I started playing with my nose. And you would think they would have noticed. And like this private school, they were like, just, oh, good, let the kid do what they want, you know? So it was just, I wasn't trying to impress her. It was just the way I did it, which apparently is not the way you're supposed to do it, but that's the way I did it. And it just put together this kind of funny act. And the great thing about the Tonight Show experience, because I had been on other shows doing that, is it was unscripted in that Johnny Carson never wanted to see what you were going to do in advance. So when he reacted, because what was priceless about this experience, which was one of the greatest experiences of my life other than like getting married and things like that, was his reactions were real. Because telling you about it is one thing, but if you've never seen it, it's like a little bit odd and unusual. And he made you better. Whereas like a lot of other people in a host position either want to demean their guests or compete. And he was he made you better. And I remember I was bumped several times. And this is kind of cool because I was very nervous because.
How could you not?
Oh my gosh. I mean.
That was like the biggest show.
Yeah. And I wasn't like even like a working actress, really. It was like in this opportunity of a lifetime, September 1st, 1987. I was 27 years old. And I remember that, you know, I was booked and you're in this green room, you get your own little dressing room and there's like a green room with snacks. And the first two times I was bumped, I can't remember one time because Shelley Winters went long and one time for another reason. And every time I was bumped, I was grateful because I was making $1,500 like
just to be there.
And it's like, you can keep bumping me. And Johnny Carson was so nice. Like he would come in the dressing room or the makeup room and, you know, like, thank you for being there. And I remember he said to me, you know, take heart, young lady. Flip Wilson was bumped several times and 7 times. You'll get like you, because apparently some people when they're bumped, you know, are like, oh, how dare you bump me? And it's like, first of all, I wouldn't do that, like, because I was also so nervous, but I was just grateful, like, for the money. And so they said, because I was so, this is a lesson, guys. When you're gracious, it's like the saying, you get more flies with honey than vinegar is true. Mm-hmm. Because I was disappointed, I will say, because this was back in the day when they had the TV guide and my name kept appearing in it. And we didn't have cell phones or text back then or email. So I would like be calling like 100 people. I'm going to be on tonight. And then twice it didn't happen. But so I was disappointed, but I was not angry or anything. And so they called me and they said, you know, because you were so gracious every time you were bumped, we're going to start the show with you, meaning I guarantee to get on. So for a complete unknown to get 10 minutes at the top of the show, I remember it was Paul Sorvino and John Lovitz after me. And they go, well, how am I going to follow that? It was quite an amazing experience.
So that's awesome. I mean, people can watch it.
Yeah, you can watch it. It's on probably their channel, my channel, lots of places, just Chef AJ Johnny Carson.
So now, what was the catalyst that go from comedian to chef?
Yeah. Okay. So that was 27. So now we got to fast forward to the age of 43. I never exactly.
What happened between 27 and 43?
Nothing. I don't know. No, I'm sure a lot happened. I mean, I got married. I went to college. I'm a late bloomer, believe it or not. So I didn't get married till I was 35. I didn't graduate college till I was 35. So a lot happened during that time. It's funny because I was just doing an assignment for a class I'm in, like a life goal class. And I've had 50 jobs. From the age that I started, because I just turned 65 here at the ranch, that's why I'm here. But from the age I started working, which was 14, until the age of 65, I've had 50 different jobs.
Wow.
Yeah, 50 jobs.
Like a millennial.
Yeah. So then what happened was actually, and this is kind of a prelude to almost like the foreshadowing of what was to come. So I developed pre-colon cancer. So when I was 43 years old, I was diagnosed, they called it pre-colon cancer because I didn't have cancer, but I had these polyps in my colon, which were bleeding. And they aren't cancer yet. This is why when people have colonoscopies and they find polyps, they remove them. They couldn't remove them because my colon was in a state of disarray, because even though I had been vegan 26 years, I was an obese junk food vegan. I weighed 180 pounds. That's 70 pounds more than I weigh now. If you don't believe me, watch the Tonight Show clip. I was a big girl, you know. Right. And so my dad was vegan for ethical reasons, not for health. I didn't even know vegan was healthy until 2011 when this movie Forks Over Knives came out and said, oh, by the way, this is good for you. I was doing it because I loved animals, but I was very unhealthy. I was having the opposite diet of the ranch. Let me tell you what my breakfast was. Coke Slurpees, 8 pumps of vanilla syrup, Dr. Pepper big gulps for lunch, candies, cakes, cookies, pies, and ice cream. But it was vegan. But it wasn't healthy. No fiber, no fruits and vegetables. And so I woke up bleeding on January 1st, 2003. And then, of course, I went to the doctor and they wouldn't do a colonoscopy, which was warranted. Today, they are very on top of it.
Yeah, they started at 40 now.
Right. So because I was, I was 43 and they said, oh, you didn't have a strong enough family history, only your, I couldn't get it done with my HMO at the time. But the colonoscopy showed that my polyp was riddled with several of these bleeding edematous polyps, but they couldn't remove them like they do because I never pooped. I mean, my colon was in bad shape. And so they said, you'll have to come back and have actual surgery. And I'm like, I'm not having surgery because I am afraid of anesthesia. Because at the age of, it was either 14 or 19, I had an allergic reaction to general anesthesia. I almost died. I was in the hospital for like 6 weeks. I almost put on a ventilator. So I've been afraid of having interventions, which was a good thing because what it forced me to do is change my diet. So I went to a place. I hadn't heard of the ranch at that point. Well, actually, I had, but I remember I heard of the ranch when I was 30. It's funny how I heard of it from a body shop guy. This is funny. So I had a body shop guy who smoked, drank, had a liver transplant. And he came here. Obviously, he didn't do those things when he was here. And he told me, well, this is the greatest place I've ever been. And I'm thinking, if you think it's the greatest place, somebody like that's already vegan is going to think it's the greatest place. So I put it on my vision board. It's like, one day I'm going to Rancho. And it did manifest. So anyway, I didn't want to have the surgery. So I went to a place, which is very cheap because it was $875 for the whole week. It was called the Optimum Health Institute.
Yeah, it's in San Diego. Yeah,
and so it was the first time that anyone ever said to me, hey, you know, what you eat is important to how you look and feel and what diseases you get in reverse. I was like, I never really heard that. I just figured everything in life is genetic. Genetics are important, but your diet does play a role as well in your lifestyle. And so I went there, I did their diet, which is like much stricter than my diet because it's 100% raw. Right. It still has no sugar, oil, salt, but it also has no taste. No offense if you're watching, but it really doesn't. It's like cheese is made out of sesame seeds and sunflower seeds. That's your protein. And then it's juice, but there's not even good juice. they're not watching. It just was terrible tasting. Okay. And so I went to culinary school because I said, if I'm going to eat this way, it has got to taste better than the Optimum Health diet. So that's when I went. I wasn't aspiring to be a chef, but that's why I went to culinary school, to learn how to make healthy food taste delicious.
So you went to the Optimum Health Center and you changed your diet.
Yes.
And then what happened with the polyps?
Yeah, this is great. This is really interesting. So I stayed on that kind of bland raw food boring diet for 2 years. I think that raw is great if you can do it. But for me, because we have two guests here that are doing right. Rancho La Puerta, right. 100% raw. They're loving it. They're getting all the fruit and salad and right. avocado. It's not a problem. For me, being a person that's always cold, I couldn't sustain the raw food diet. But during that 2 years, within 6 months, when I went back to have a repeat sigmoidoscopy, all the polyps were gone. And the GI doctor said, where did you have surgery? And I'm like, I didn't have surgery. He goes, well, how do you explain this? Your colon is now pink and clear and clean and vascular like a newborn baby. I said, well, you know, I changed my diet. He goes, well, yeah, that's impossible. And the other GI doctor, when he left, said, I believe you. And I say this because I want people to know that, yes, genetics matter, but there is hope. This is my underlying message when we get to the big bombshell we're going to drop. I believe there's always hope. Like I now that what I'm doing with interviewing people, even people that are stage 4 pancreatic cancer that are alive 18 years later, mm-hmm. it's never too late. Right. It's never too late if you're breathing.
And it's never too early, and it's never too late. Everyone I've been talking to this year, talking about epigenetics,
yeah.
and that our lifestyle can turn our genes off and
absolutely.
On. It's like 90% of who we are is based on lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is genetics.
Absolutely.
Too. So now you obviously don't weigh 180 pounds.
No, I weigh 110. So, I'm 5'5".
When did that happen?
Well, so that's another story. And actually, one of the lectures that I get to give in the ranch is kind of about weight loss, which not everybody needs, but it's also tied into the healthiest foods. Because I remember when you had, what was that lovely lady's name that used to be the diet? Yvette.
Yeah. Yvonne.
Yvonne, yeah. She approved this lecture called Eat Up, Slim Down, and Get Healthy. So that was a process that over time, I learned that there are foods that are calorically dense and calorically dilute, and they can still be very healthy foods. Like, for example, nuts and nut butters. They are very healthy, but they're very calorically dense, whereas foods like fruits and vegetables, which are also very healthy, have almost no calories. And when I learned this concept of caloric density, which is taught by many people in the world, not just plant-based people, Dr. Barbara Rolls of Penn State, you know, Dr. Dean Ornish, this idea of eat more, weigh less, when I started substituting and eating more of the high nutrient, low calorie foods like fruits and vegetables, whole grains, legumes, and not eating the processed vegan food like bread and things like that. You know, I mean, you know, it's not that bread is completely unhealthy. It's just 3 times as more calorically dense as the whole grain. When I learned this idea of caloric density, that I could eat more food and weigh less just by shifting what was on my plate, it was like the weight came off. And it took about 2 years. It wasn't like an Ozempic thing. I changed my eating and really very seriously. It was actually before I started coming here. So you never actually saw me heavy. But it took about 2 years for me to lose the weight. It wasn't like I was losing like 10 pounds a week. It was a nice, slow, steady, but I didn't suffer because I could eat large salads and fruits and even large portions of potatoes and rice and sweet potatoes. But I just put aside the calorically dense things like alcohol and oils and sugar.
Right.
And that's kind of what I did.
Did you add exercise or have you always?
Yeah. No. Oh my God. I got to credit the ranch because I honestly, I'm a lifelong couch potato until I came to the ranch. I mean, the ranch gives you so many gifts. I mean, the spiritual, emotional, physical, but this is where I finally learned to exercise. And what I learned, first of all, when it comes to exercise, when it comes to anything, meditation, you don't necessarily have to love it. You just have to do it if it's a goal, right? Because I wouldn't say I love exercise now, but it's such a habit and it's because of the ranch. So when I finally started to lose weight, I had broken my knee and I was in a wheelchair and I was too fat for crutches or a walker. And it was embarrassing to me because I wasn't even 50 years old and my husband's taking care of my needs because I was so heavy that I couldn't do these things. And I was like, this is mortifying to me. I want to be independent. I mean, I think if I was 85, but I'm 49. And I said, you know, when I get out of this wheelchair, I'm going to, you know, do something about it. And I remember, it's funny, the orthopedic doctor said to me, you know, have you ever thought about losing weight? You know, and I'm like, oh, no, like, come on.
Yeah.
But he did say something that was really interesting to me that I'd never heard, that every pound you're overweight is like 5 to 10 pounds of extra weight to your joints. And somehow hearing it that way just kind of made me think, because at the time I was working as a vegan pastry chef and I was standing long hours, and the knee that was compromised, I didn't want to have surgery because of that bad experience that was offered, would swell. And I thought, you know, a lot of people want to be thinner for different reasons. But when I had this motive to do it, because I really did not, I felt really bad and I wanted to feel really good. It wasn't just about weight or, you know, looks or, you know, actually, I got less funny as I got thinner. I'm less funny now. I was so much funnier. I don't know why, but no, I didn't exercise. You know, I jumped to conclusions. That was my one form of exercise. But when I was at the ranch, you have everything that the only form of exercise that I've ever done, and I did it once when I spoke on a cruise, which was underwater spinning. Okay. Other than that, I don't think there is a form of exercise that is not offered here. And because of that, I could take all these classes, and not all of them resonated with me. Some of them were too hard, and some of them, but I got to try different kinds of yoga. I got to try Pilates, both the reformer and the mat. I got to try TRX and ropes and Basu ball and rebounding. And I got to try all these things. But what got me, and I remember who some of my teachers were, that we just saw them, the adorable Connie and Coco and Manuel. It's funny because they were the teachers. And I think Alejandro once was too. So I took the spin class because it was like only 30 minutes. And they're like saying, you know, you can burn like 40. Like, and I'm like, you know what? I can do this.
Right.
I don't have to love it, but I can do it. The music is fun. The people are fun. And I bought a bike because I don't love going to a gym with all the sweaty people. I bought my own bike, the kind that you have here, Kaiser, and I just committed to doing it. And I pretty much get on that bike every day for a minimum of 60 minutes. And I know it's probably better to diversify, but it is because of the ranch that at the age of 54, I became a lifelong exerciser.
I mean, it's better to be consistent, do something, right?
Yeah, so. But if it wasn't for the experience of the ranch, I wouldn't have been exposed, because, you know, you exercise, you know, in my mind, running or lifting weights, both of which I don't like.
Hi, my name is Jen DeMarco, and I'm part of the Rancho La Puerta fitness staff. This year makes 39 years for me with the company. I actually started at the Golden Door. And I wanted to say a few words about the ranch as an environment that is so helpful for those of us who have encountered some health challenges. And I myself am a 10-year survivor of ovarian cancer. And a little bit more recently, I've been rehabbing a spine injury from a car accident. And through it all, through these episodes in my life, and I'd like to say I'm free and clear, so I'm completely cancer-free at this point. And I have grown over these years to appreciate the ranch environment so very much for the way that it gives an element of support in every aspect of life. So we have the access to nature and being able to be out on the trails and surrounded by the beautiful landscaping. Being out in nature, I find something very nurturing. We have this amazing diet, the farm-to-table diet that we eat, that is really plant-based forward in our diet, is something that we all know is so great for creating a healthy inner environment. We have access to all of the movement principles, every kind of fitness activity that you could think of. And then, if you've ever been in my classes here at the ranch, you may know that I'm really drawn to the inner practices of yoga and meditation. And from that perspective, we have this access to these inner practices that allow us to use that approach to changing our inner environment. I love to tell my meditation classes that our thoughts contribute to the inner environment of our body every bit as much as the food we eat or don't eat, the exercise that we do or don't do. And so here at the ranch, this combination of nature, healthy food, healthy movement practice, and then a really rich inner practice are such a wonderful way to create all of the conditions to move forward in a healthy and positive way.
I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply. I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply.
Yeah, okay, let's shift gears a little because you have like almost 100,000 followers on Instagram. Wow. As a chef.
Yeah, yeah.
How did that happen? I mean, how many books have you written?
I've written four. They've all been bestsellers on Amazon. Many of them were self-published, so they couldn't be in the way the real world works. I was hoping that this last one would be New York Times. It was very close. So, I don't know how it is. I mean, I just make posts, and I don't really engage much in social media myself, so I don't know the ins and outs. Maybe it's lucky, or maybe people just resonate with some of the things that I'm doing.
So people haphazardly find you?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have some people helping me now, like with some of the things, but with YouTube, I mean, I do have close. I'm so close. Come on, if only 4,000 more people subscribe, I'll have a quarter of a million. That I know. And this is kind of interesting because, you know, what's not that I'm good at it, is that we don't have a choice. Is sometimes life is the way it is and you have to pivot. You can't just keep doing what you're doing if you want to survive. You know, so what happened is when the pandemic happened, all my work stopped because the way I was making money was I would go, you know, on cruises and do cooking classes for 400 people. I would speak at conferences and lectures. Well, guess what? For about 2 years,
none of that.
That was nothing. And I couldn't teach in culinary schools because they were either closing or not there. So on the first day, it was March 20th, 2022, when Gavin Newsom said shelter in place, I went live on my YouTube channel, which had only about 70,000 subscribers at that time. Actually, I wasn't even trying to go live on YouTube. I had a private membership group and I was trying to talk to them. And I'm very technologically challenged. So whatever button I pushed, I ended up going live on both Facebook and YouTube generally. And because it was early in the pandemic, people wanted connection. About 600 people were watching. And I just started doing it every day. But I realized, God, I'm boring. Like, I don't want to just be me. So I know a lot of people that are chefs and doctors. And I said, will you come on and just talk? And then all of a sudden, it was a show called Chef AJ Live. And then I'm getting like, you know, 100 requests a day to be on my show. My goal was to do it for 5 years. I made it 4.5 years without a break, going live every day, doing a show for over 2,000 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Every day.
And that's what grew me to that. Yeah. Right. Every single day. Talk about, I'm the Cal Ripken of YouTube, you know?
And this is your latest book.
Yeah,
and it's called Sweet and Dolly.
It's my favorite.
And it's all desserts.
It's all desserts sweetened naturally with fruit. The fruit, the whole fruit, and nothing but the fruit.
So there's no gluten, there's no sugar in these recipes.
Right. And now it depends what you define sugar. I don't think of fruit as sugar.
Right.
You know,
right,
it has natural sugar.
Right.
And so the sweeteners would be things like dates. Date paste, which is dates that are made pulverized with liquid date syrup, which you can make yourself or buy, and other fruits like bananas, even sweet potatoes can be a sweetener. So there's absolutely no refined sugar. I do everything gluten free just because I feel like you have a wider audience that way, and there's also no oil in any of the recipes.
So you don't do oil ever.
I don't. And there's
not even olive oil.
I don't. And here's my philosophy because I wrote my first book was called Unprocessed. I feel like if there's anything healthy in the olive oil, it will be in the olive. So I eat the olive because it has the fiber, vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, antioxidants, and micronutrients. And what we talked about before, caloric density, it's 400 calories per pound as opposed to 4,000. So I eat the whole food fats like the nuts and the seeds and the avocado and the flax seeds instead of their processed oils.
Right.
So they're whole food fats in there. There's just no oil and there's no salt. I don't know why you need salt in desserts, but I know that's a thing.
Yeah. No, I'm excited because my daughter's a vegan. I'm going to do this
for her. I forgot to put, I have food for you. I forgot the granola. Right. No, you'll still be here.
Yes, I will be. Well, let's switch gears one more time. And we'll you talked about dropping a big bomb.
Yeah,
boom. Let's drop the big
bomb. Okay.
So, yeah. What is your...
So, the big bomb was that I was diagnosed with stage 3 lung cancer with one metastasis.
When did that happen?
So, that happened, I want to say November 5th of last year. But I had first been diagnosed 2 years ago with stage 1A lung adenocarcinoma.
Which is, what does that mean?
That means the tumor is smaller and slower growing at that time. And it's not that I didn't take it seriously, but it was too small to biopsy. And it took a year and a half to get an oncologist. And so I wasn't happy about it, but I wasn't willing to get my lung taken out or get radiation without a confirmed diagnosis, which didn't happen until December 17th when they could get a tissue biopsy. It's called no meat, no treat. I did get what was called a blood biopsy, which anybody can get on their own. It's quite expensive, which did diagnose it. But, you know, it's unfortunately until you get an oncologist, you can't really get treatment. And
did you have any symptoms? Or?
No, this is the thing. I don't have any symptoms except for anxiety because I'm told I have cancer. I keep saying I'm told. I don't like to say I have it, but apparently the scans and everything show it. So no symptoms of cancer whatsoever.
So it was just a standard regular checkup?
It was found incidentally. That's why they call them incidental pulmonary nodules in August of 2022 when a urologist misdiagnosed me with interstitial cystitis when all I had was a simple UTI. And I said to my primary doctor, I said, I don't have this disease. It's painful. For 100 days I was suffering. Just look for something else. So they did an abdominal CT scan. And that's when they picked up the tumors on the lung and the liver. They were small at the time. Yeah.
It's on the liver too?
Yeah, but these aren't growing, 4-millimeter tumors. And, you know, my brother died of pancreatic cancer and my grandfather of bone cancer and my father of prostate cancer. So we have a lot of cancer in my family.
Okay.
And like I said, I had that scare at 43. I was not expecting this, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, you're the picture of doing everything right.
And that's why it killed me to get diagnosed because I took it as like a big slap in the face for the universe. Like for 20 years, I was eating this perfect, pristine diet. And but others would say that maybe that's why I don't have symptoms. Maybe that's why it's so slow growing.
Right.
I don't know.
So are you doing treatment?
I am now. I am. I kind of had to wait until I was 65 or at least the March, my birthday is March 22nd, but on March 1st, I got Medicare and the world is my oyster. So I finally can get good care at Stanford. I'm going to Stanford. I don't live near there, but I'm going there and I'm getting something called immunotherapy. It's not chemo. Not that there's anything wrong with chemo if you want. I just didn't feel I could handle chemo, even though it was offered. I didn't feel I could handle a complete lobectomy and I didn't feel I could handle radiation. But I was very lucky that with the genetic typing, there's something called PD-L1 and I was 85% match, that I was a strong match for an immunotherapy drug called Keytruda. It's what Jimmy Carter took when he was 90. He lived another 10 years. It's not benign in that it is still a drug and you could get side effects, but it's much gentler. It only takes 30 minutes for the treatment as opposed to many hours like chemo. And what it does is instead of killing the cancer along with all the good stuff, which was what chemo does, it enhances the immune system to just attack the cancer. So I've had my first treatment and my next one is in a couple of days.
You don't get nauseous or anything?
You know, after the first treatment, I was nauseous for a little bit that afternoon and the next day and a little tired, but you know, anything is possible. You can even lose your hair. It's so funny because I saw your wig when we came in here. I always feel like, you know, if you bring your umbrella, it's not going to rain. Better to have it and not to need it. So even before treatment started, I have 7 wigs now. I've never worn them, all different colors and styles, but just in case. And I feel like, well, I'm probably not going to lose my hair because I got all these wigs.
Right. So I noticed, I saw a talk and you have, lessons that you learn.
Oh my gosh.
In today's world, there's not a person who isn't affected by cancer in some way. Someone they love, someone they know, they themselves. I mean, it's an epidemic.
It is. And it's getting people younger.
Yeah.
And it's and the thing about lung cancer is it's so stigmatized because of the connection with smoking.
Right.
And what people don't understand, because it's very poorly funded, is that anybody that has lungs can get lung cancer. And it's happening in younger people, especially women, and people that never smoke.
But I think that air quality is so...
Oh, yeah. Lived in L.A. Hello.
Yeah. So
my whole... Up until I was 60.
But you have a really... positive outlook.
That is the most important thing in everything. I mean, this is like, I think about Deborah when she talks, and, you know, she's had tragedies in her life. She's lost a son, a husband,
a
granddaughter. And, you know, I remember even asking her once, like, how do you bounce back? How do you have this resiliency? And it's like, I really believe it's your attitude, your mental attitude in life is the most important thing.
Right.
Like the most important thing.
Right. So what are some...
Yeah, okay. So the top 10, I wrote them down because I get a little nervous and I forget.
Healthy.
But yeah, thank you. Well, the top 10 things having cancer has taught me is don't judge others. I tried really hard not to be a judgy vegan like some people, at least not through my mouth, but in my head. And I realized, it's like, you know, how can I judge anybody about what they're eating or anything? Because I got cancer. I'm the one that got cancer. So if you're eating a Big Mac and you're healthy and happy, God bless you. So now I zip the lip. I might still have a little twinge of a thought like, that's not healthy.
Right.
Zip the lip.
Right.
Do not judge others. Like, because when a finger is pointing out, three are pointing back at you.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we all look for reasons, you know? Oh, that person has lung cancer. Clearly they smoked.
Yeah.
Like a chimney.
Yeah.
No, not always.
Not always. Yeah. Yeah. Don't blame the victim. And even if they did, so do we not help them?
Of course.
I mean, you know, people, there's a link between processed meat and colon cancer. Right. Do we then not treat them because they eat bologna? You know, so really that's been a hard one. So, but I'm getting better every day. The next one is like, never say never, because it always bites you in the ass. Always.
Yeah.
And so like, I remember, you know, when I was 40 years old, I was this, you know, I'm this cocky vegan. Oh, I don't get colonoscopies or mammograms, you know, because I'm a healthy vegan and diet. Well, diet is wonderful because, especially because I'm doing it for the animals and the planet. It's a great thing if that's what you want to do, but it doesn't guarantee that you're never going to get sick. And one of the plant-based doctors who actually is a cancer previvor explained that our diet and our lifestyle is like a seatbelt. It's a good idea to wear a seatbelt, but you can still get in an accident. Mm-hmm. It could be serious. You could even die. So a diet, it doesn't protect you from everything.
Right.
And so I remember thinking when I started refusing colonoscopies and mammograms in my 40s, because I'm a vegan, I don't need to get checked out. The doctor would say, well, what would you do if you get cancer? And I go, well, I'm not going to do anything. You know, I'll go to True North and water fast, which is part of my treatment. But never say never, because guess what?
Right.
I'm getting cancer treatment now, and I'm glad, because it's very possibly going to save my life and extend my life. None of us are guaranteed anything in life. Anything. And that's like, you know,
it is a blessing.
That's right.
Every day.
You know, I mean, just you do your best and bless the rest. You can eat well, exercise. I mean, nobody's guaranteed anything.
Right.
It's like, and that's why you do have to be grateful for every day. And which leads me to the next one, live every day like it's your last. And I don't mean in a morbid way, like it's your last, because there's a saying, today's the first day of the rest of your life. No, it could be the last. And so I'm really conscious about, like, you know, like if I have a fight with my husband, you know, or the thing, I mean, like I'm super aware of life. I'm living life on a different plane now. Not like that I'm this great yogi, but I'm super aware of my life of every minute now, because I know that I have lived more of my life than what is going to come ahead, even without cancer, because I'm 65. And so I'm just super conscious and aware of all the decisions I'm making and the way I'm treating people, because we could all get hit by a car, but this could be I'm just more aware. It's like that. There's a sentence in the play Our Town, Thornton Wilder, where Emily, who died, is up on the hill talking to the narrator. And she says, do human beings ever realize their life every moment when they live it? And he goes, no, saints and poets, maybe. But I'm Emily now. I mean, I'm Emily and I'm alive. It's like it's really like cancer has given me the gift of being alive.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like I was living my best life, or gratitude, awareness now. Like, you know, like if I wake up in the morning, like I literally say to myself, ooh, I'm not dead. Like, really, I don't love it in many ways, but in many ways, it's really been a blessing.
I think that when I wake up every morning, I'm like, I woke up again.
Yeah.
There's a reason the higher powers have woke me up today. What is it, you know?
Absolutely. And I'm kind of using it to do good in the world. And one of the doctors called me up and said, this is going to be your best work now. This is how you're really going to be, you know, you're fine as a chef, but this is how you're really going to help people. And I am trying to help people what I call thrive in the face of cancer, because I couldn't find the resources and help that I needed. And I'm trying to get those out to people through my YouTube channel so they don't have to go through this alone. Oh, and this is one. What you think is perhaps more important than what you eat. And it's not that we should just eat at McDonald's every day, but I know people that do, and they seem to be having an okay life right now. I feel like what we put in here, like our thoughts are more powerful and more important even than what we put in our mouth. And so thinking is... So everything I'm doing now is more of the mind, you know, like things right. like Joe Dispenza, Louise, you know, it's the stuff you do at the ranch, you know?
I know. I mean, I think that your mind controls your emotions. Your emotions control your mind.
So because I've always been anxious, and anxiety is not good for healing for anything, especially cancer. So doing more of the, you know, so it's funny because this time, you know, all the classes I'm doing are the inner journey, the meditation, the sound healing, working on, you know, from the neck up. Kind of thing. Genetics matter, but they're not the whole story, right? So, you know, your diet and lifestyle are still important. Oh, you'll like this one. Worrying doesn't change the outcome.
And that's a hard one for everyone.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah. You know, because like we have this thing, people with cancer have to, but we choose to get scans from time to time. Sometimes it's every 3 months, every six, PET scans or CAT scans. And even people without anxiety tend to get this thing called scanxiety. And so it's not going to change the outcome. And what, you know, and I've learned that because like there was a 30-day, you know, the 30 days I was waiting for the genetic things, you know, guess what? It didn't change it. And then I lost 30 days through worrying. So it doesn't change the outcome. But that's a hard one. This one, you can substitute the word cat for dog, but all you need is love. And a dog, or in your case, a cat. Because that's just my husband and my dog are kind of my rock and how important they are to me. Oh, you're going to love this one. I know you're going to love this one. If you lose your sense of humor, you have lost everything.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think you probably believe that. I think humor is spiritual. Mm-hmm. I think it really is. And, you know, it's a way to deal with things.
Yeah, I think that's why people like bingo with Barry so much. It wasn't so much the game of bingo. Right. I think it was you. And that's why you were saying last night, I think if you just had anything with Barry, like tea with Barry, popcorn, like people like you and the way you make them feel and the way you laugh. Because, yes, it was fun to win a prize, obviously. People did like the little tchotchkes and everything. Right. But I think that's what people miss. And I remember the first time I came to the ranch in February of 2012, you know, when you're a first-timer, other people will tell you, and I'm telling you this is the truth, is everybody would say, you can miss anything except for bingo with Barry. And that was the word on the street for years, that was the only must thing you have to do here. So people are missing that. And I think it's because that shows how much they love you and the interaction they had with you.
Well, making people laugh, it helps them forget things.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you take things too serious, I mean, even life, I mean, ultimately we're all going to die. It doesn't matter what we do. That's the one for certainty, you know? So
things happen when you laugh. T-cell immunity is increased. I mean, there was a guy named Norman Cousins who laughed his way out of cancer. And I read his book, Anatomy of an Illness, right away. And so when I got diagnosed, it's funny, the first call, this is like so bizarre, but the first, I didn't even tell my husband first or my regular doctor. I called my comedy teacher and I said, Carrie, you better start teaching again because I need a class. And so I immersed myself into doing as much comedy as I could. There's not a lot of opportunities in Roseville, California, but I'm doing online improv with Patrick Bristow in any opportunity to laugh or make somebody else laugh. And in Vegas, August 30th of this year, I'm performing at a plant-based conference called the Plant Powered Party. And we do a comedy set. It's not written yet, so don't ask for some of the jokes, but it's kind of based on having cancer. Like,
wow.
Yeah. So, I can tell you like one of them, it's not for me yet, but I keep telling my husband because they have support groups for people with cancer and their spouses. And I'm like, why don't you go to one of the you know, the caregiver groups, and you know, I don't want to go. I go, you should go. You can meet your next wife there. And so those are the kind of jokes. I mean, and I'm not going to make fun of cancer or people with cancer, me and my experience, you know.
Right. I mean, being able to laugh at yourself.
That's what's going to heal me. And so when I did come, that's the other thing. One of the hardest things was is that I hid my cancer, my diagnosis for the first year and a half, because people were saying, well, it's going to hurt the plant-based movement because people aren't going to become vegan. And it's like, that's not my job, you know. First of all, it was when I came out on my channel that, and that's the other thing, being authentic, that people really started resonating with the truth of what I'm going through.
I think life is amazing. Every day is truly a gift, but that doesn't mean that it's all positive. We all have challenges we have to go through. It's how we look at those challenges. We can only change what we can change, but we can always change how we think about things. AJ has never smoked. She's been a vegan for 47 years. She exercises and takes care of herself, and yet she got lung cancer. AJ is journaling about the lessons that cancer is teaching her. We can always grow and learn from every situation that happens to us. The thing that struck me the most about what AJ said is that she now thinks that how we think and how we talk to ourselves is more important than anything else we do. Thanks for listening in. Until next time, this is Barry wishing you health, daily joy, and lots of positive thinking.